Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
The world is changing faster than ever, and you need a website to go with it. Whether you're a seasoned pro looking to build your following or just starting out with a brand new idea, you need a landing page that's bold, innovative, and uniquely yours.
Whatever your passion, you need a web designer with experience, panache, and heart. We can't help you with any of that. Hi, I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Greg Benson. Are we Silicon Valley tech visionaries? No, we're podcast hosts, and that's basically the same thing. And we're here to tell you about Ancestral Agave Syrup.
Ancestral Agave Syrup is the 100% pure nectar of the agave plant. Now, wait a minute, you're thinking. I've had 100% pure agave nectar. Well, not like this, you haven't.
That stuff is processed with a diffuser, which introduces acid. Plus, it comes from Blue Weber, a monoculture that dominates farms, depletes the soil, and won't help you grow your brand or expand your e-commerce functionality.
Ancestral agave syrup, on the other hand, is made by slowly cooking down the pure agua miel from Salmiana agaves in Hidalgo and Tlaxcala, two states that have been harvesting those plants for generations. It also won't expand your e-commerce functionality, but it will grow your brand if your brand is person who makes kick-ass margaritas, or pecan pies, or pancakes.
Unfortunately, the families behind this tasty stuff are being offered big beer company bucks to rip out their agave and plant barley instead, which would be a crime, because Ancestral Agave Syrup is about as far from the processed stuff as 100% pure Vermont maple syrup is from that sticky bottle at a diner.
So, don't build a homepage from one of several easy-to-use templates, but do grab Ancestral Agave Syrup today. Our first 25 customers will also receive a special limited edition agave superhero comic book. So do not wait. Protect the land, make better drinks, and save the bats by grabbing some today.
Wait, what was that about bats?
Yeah, it's an important food source on the migration path of the Mexican long-nosed bat.
Huh.
Yeah, the flowering stalks of the agave also provide protection from predators.
Oh, well, that's cool. Should we get back to the ad now?
Yeah, let's do that. Go to ancestralagave.com or click the link in the show notes to grab some today.
Ancestral Agave Syrup. It won't help you build a beautiful website, but it will make your cocktails taste really, really good.
I am Lou Bank.
I'm Heather Morse.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico,
where you have just spent quite a bit of time, Heather.
Almost a month, yeah.
Almost a month. That is awesome. So you reached out to me and you found out about me through through your husband, right?
Yes. Yep.
Who,
former Cleveland bartenders.
Right.
Met I did you there.
I've done one tasting in Cleveland, and you know, like this is the beauty of the world of agave is that it it's not the world of agave, it's the world. And agave makes it so small. It's so small and we're all connected. Like he attended a tasting that I did and you guys were headed to Mexico. And so you reached out to find out if there was some place you should visit.
Yeah. So we were actually in Mexico City. And I remember we were like cooking in the kitchen and trying to figure out, at the time we were supposed to have 3 days in Guadalajara. So we were trying to figure out what to do that could help him. He loves learning about tequila, mezcal, everything to do with agave, really. And he was like, well, I met this, I met this guy in Cleveland at a tasting who does stuff in Mexico. He might know, maybe can give us some recommendations. So that's how I reached out to you. I sent you an email, and then the beauty of what you do, it's very aligned with what I do with my company, Create Joy Travel. And so
you said
Create Joy Travel. Okay. I don't know why I say it so quickly always.
Because yeah, you're just so used to the name. The rest of us aren't, but I get that. Right. So when you reached out to me, obviously, like anytime I can help somebody, I'm trying to help somebody. The story that you told me blew me away and made me think, okay, hang on, this is an episode of Agave Road Trip, because I take Agave Road Trips 8 to 10 times a year now. But you've taken what I would consider the most epic agave road trip I have ever heard of.
Yes, it was full of interesting adventures, wild checkpoint stops from, I don't know who, I don't know who stopped us, but people, we were stopped, and it was pretty amazing.
Yeah. So let's get into it, right? Like you drove from your home in Las Vegas, Nevada, to Mexico City in your car.
Yep.
Okay, so that alone. We're getting there. Hang on. It's the cliffhanger. We're getting there. Which, like, in and of itself is pretty epic, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the cherry on the top is you did this with your dog and your cat.
Yes. Well, you have a Great Dane Boxer and a
Great
Orange Tabby Cat.
Dane Boxer. I mean, the French
boy.
Tabby Cat, like any kind of cat. It's not like, you know, if you had said, like, yeah, what are those big ones? Like the Maine?
Maine Coons. Yeah.
Maine Coons. Like, those cats are big cats. Mm-hmm. Like, any cat is just a cat unless it's a huge cat. But the fact that you had a giant dog in your car, I find fascinating, because, I mean, that adds. This is the point, right, that I want to make. And this is the point, I think, to the episode is I got to believe that there are a bunch of Gringex bartenders who would be interested in doing what you did, traveling to Mexico in a car. And so I thought your insights could be helpful. And then you add on top of it, like, okay, I'd like to go for 4 weeks, but what do I do with my cat and dog? And you've got the answer to that too.
Yep. Yeah. No, it was from the moment we crossed the border to the moment we crossed the border again, it was a wild ride. A lot of planning goes into it, especially when you're bringing a dog and a cat, right? I mean, you have to have, we never ended up showing our papers really at all the entire trip, not through the border, not, nothing.
You mean for the animals, you had to show your passports.
Oh, we had to show our passport, but I mean, we had all the paperwork. We had pretty much everything you can imagine. We had the health certificates, even though that's not required any longer.
Really?
We went and got them just in case. Yeah, in 2019, they changed it. You used to have to have a health certificate for each pet. And now you just need to have a rabies certificate. And that's pretty much it. So, but we got a health certificate just in case, because just in case, right? You never know.
Yeah, you don't want to have to leave your dog at the border. I mean, the cat would be okay, but not the dog.
So the cat would be okay doing anything. I'm pretty sure he's crazy. But we never had to show papers for them. I mean, every stop that we had, every checkpoint, whether it was official or non-official, we never showed paperwork for anything. So that was kind of wild. I mean, people should bring paperwork, but we never really had to take anything out.
So let's start going down the whole, like, the logistics of the trip. So do you know roughly how many miles, how long it took you, that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So I think it was about, when we started in Las Vegas, because we did stop in Tucson before crossing the border. It was about, I think, 35 to 40 hours, something like that, from our home to Mexico City. And it took us on our way down 4 days. We had one really, really long day because we took Spanish lessons in Mexico City. So we had to be back or be in Mexico City for that, the start of those Spanish lessons. And then on the way back, it took 5 days. And then we spent 2 weeks in Mexico City. So we drove down 15D, which is a toll road, which I highly recommend.
You recommend that road specifically or toll roads in general?
Toll roads in general.
Yeah.
I mean, every route that we researched had some sort of negative aspect to it, right? 15D had its things that we had to be cautious about. The states that we were in, some of them weren't the greatest or weren't travel advisory the greatest. Mm-hmm. But I would recommend the route that we took because we got to see a lot of aspects of Mexico. We got to see some mainland beach ocean towns. We got to drive through some really beautiful smaller towns. We got to drive through the monocultural area of agave.
beautiful.
Yeah, it was like miles and miles of agave. They grow them on the side of the mountain. So you're driving and you just see like this sea of blue and green.
You're talking about Jalisco now, right? The Blue Weber.
Yeah. So the route itself, I'd highly recommend. It was an easier entry point in the Nogales. Mm-hmm. And even though some of the states weren't rated the greatest, we didn't really... we didn't really encounter anything insane except for not knowing who the checkpoints were. I think that was probably the wildest aspect of the drive was these random like tent setups with guys in not really a uniform, well, just sort of searching and taking apart our vehicle. But
well, hang on a second. So when you cross the border, they must be in uniform, right?
Oh, yeah, they were, you could tell that they were like border crossing agents. There was some military there. So that's very obvious. You can tell who's military and policia, but these checkpoints didn't have policia vehicles.
And these are just just in different parts of the state when you cross from one state to the other. Like you're just, so you encountered about how many do you think that were unofficial?
Unofficial, yeah. It's a great word for it. They truly seemed that way. We had two going down to Mexico City and two coming back. And they weren't typically located where one state ended and one like the state borders.
Yeah.
There we on our way back we'd hit like agricultural checks, like do you have any fruits or nuts or veggies, anything like that. These were like, where are you from? We'd say Las Vegas. We were immediately directed to pull over. like as soon as we said Las Vegas, they just pull over. And then they'd ask us to get out and we'd be like, can we bring out the dog and the cat? And of course they'd say yes. And so we're holding the cat on the side of the road, but luckily he's a champion. And honestly, I think, he was our savior in some of these circumstances.
Really?
Because they were so, they were so fascinated with Fuego, more so than
Fuego.
I think even searching the car, like
it's a good name for a cat, by the way, Fuego. Yeah, I like that.
Especially when you're in Mexico.
Yeah. That's a name they'll understand. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, exactly. And the one guy took pictures for his son. Like he was like, can I take pictures of Fuego? And meanwhile, they're like tearing out our radio.
Wait. Slow down. Hang on. So the guy took pictures of your cat like he'd never seen a cat before?
I think it was the fact that we were traveling with him. And out of those four stops, two of the stops, it was very clear that Fuego was like, he lessened the tension, if not even caused them to be like, move forward. I mean, the one of the ones coming back was probably one of the sketchier ones. It was just like a guy standing with a tent behind him and a gun that you could very clearly see, but no real uniform.
Yeah.
Had like a scarf wrapped around his face. And he asked my husband, Aaron Howard, to roll down the window of the driver's side back window so he could look into the back of our Jeep to see what we had. And when he rolled it down, all he sees is this cat just like sprawled out in his bed, like just sleeping so like cutely. And he laughed, asked us the name of our pets, and let us go without even, you know, caring where we were from or anything. So there were definitely a few times Fuego saved the day.
But not the dog. And you've got like a giant dog.
I know.
I would have thought the dog
poor
would.
Duke.
Oh, that's so weird to me. Okay. So anyway, so Fuego saves the day. Bring a cat with you. Maybe you can rent
Total
a cat
advice.
For the trip if you don't have one. And right, can they rent your cat? Do you rent your cat out for trips to Mexico?
I mean, it depends on the person. We'd have to really test him out. I don't know how Fuego would do.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Apparently okay with strangers because he was fine with people yelling his name and taking his picture. So
as long
maybe
as they pronounce Fuego properly, it's okay.
For sure. You need to pronounce his name.
But okay, so then the other thing that you said was they were taking apart your radio?
Oh, yeah. So they pulled... At one time, they pulled our radio out of the car. They put it back, and it worked fine. But they also pulled out, like, the side paneling of our kind of trunk area, and they put that back out, you know, so...
They put it back properly, or they just, like...
Oh, yeah.
Really?
No, they just popped it back in. I mean, each stop varied in depth of search.
Yeah.
So, and there was no, like, it was weird. There wasn't, like, attention to it. But there was sort of like a, who are these people that just searched our car? Because we couldn't really tell who they were.
Hang on. There wasn't attention to it. If somebody pulls the radio out of my car, I'm going to feel tension. Like I'm going to, I'm probably going to get a little more uppity than I should be getting. Right. Because I'm going to be thinking in my case, it's not going to be my car. It's going to be a rental car. And I'm going to be thinking about the charges that my non-for-profit is going to incur as a result of damage that these guys are going to do. And so I'm going to be, you know, hang on. But you didn't feel any of that? What about Aaron? Aaron must be somewhat human.
Oh, yeah. So Aaron and I are very different, especially when traveling. And so I think he was feeling it. I think one thing that helped again was the distraction of the pets being on the side of the road. And like one of us would have Fuego, one of us would have Duke. And I'd also be holding our paperwork. Like they'd always let me remove like my purse and the paperwork from the car and hold on to it. And so I feel like Aaron was probably, and I can't speak for him having a completely different view of the situation, but I think their laughter and the human aspects of each one, it kind of made it lighter. Like they were just normal people searching our car. They weren't mean.
They were normal people searching our car.
They were just, they weren't like, there was the last one that we had on our way back was, they were a little grumpy, but at that point we had done them so much, we kind of knew the routine. But the first two, we were really lucky in the introduction to that sort of procedure that we had because the first one was taking pictures of Fuego and like everyone was admiring Fuego and the dog and laughing at the fact that we were traveling with them and asking one. And the second one of the guys asked, I have a world map on my forearm. One of the guys came over and was asking me about the world map and like, so, and the tattoos that I had. So it was, and broke. I mean, obviously it was very hard to interpret, communicate, but. So it wasn't like a super intimidating situation for me, but I think Aaron might feel differently. You should interview him too. Differently. We're so different.
but I have to say too that that being the case, it's remarkable to me that what you're saying is I've seen. Not in my interactions with cartel members. I have no idea if I've interacted with cartel members. It sounds to me like you did, right?
That's what our Spanish teacher was hinting at, the fact that that's what we were encountering, yes.
Right. So, like, given that, it's remarkable to me that what you're saying, in essence, is they're just people, too. And I think there's an important lesson in that. I think we can be so intimidated by the things that we don't know
and the people that we don't know, and you start making assumptions. I start making assumptions about, like, oh, well, who works for the cartel? Well, I watched Ozark. I know what those people are like, right? But that's not who, like, people are people.
No.
And
yes,
you show
exactly.
them that you've got a pet cat. You're traveling through Mexico with your cat and your dog.
Yeah.
And they become human. And that makes you more human. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it was a matter of, you know, I kind of go about, especially when traveling, go about the thought process of, you know, I'm aware. I'm not like flighty or like, I don't kind of put my head in the cloud when it comes to, especially as when I travel solo, as a person who, you know, I'm aware, but I'm not fearful, because I think if you live in fear while you're traveling, then you're never going to be like, you're just going to be tense and close-minded the whole time. And Mexico is one of those countries, you read so much negativity about it, but it is such a phenomenal country. The people, the culture, the food, the agave spirits, like it's a beautiful country with wonderful people. And it's, I mean, if you think about it safety wise, like we have things in our country that aren't safe either.
Yeah.
And
yeah, one of them's called Chicago. Yeah. where I
yeah.
live. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So you just have to be conscious and aware. And so I approach it as if my gut's telling me something, if I'm feeling some sort of tension or feeling, if I feel anxious about something, then I'll start becoming more solution forward. But in these circumstances, I feel like they were just doing something that was so routine to them. And so it didn't feel dangerous. Whoever they were, they didn't make it feel dangerous. They made it feel like this is the process we go through with whoever we pull over, just go through it, handle it, be patient, and then we'll let you go. And that's kind of I think that's why I had such like a positive quote unquote experience doing that. Yeah.
You know, that reminds me of the one time that I am certain that my life was in danger in Mexico. And I wasn't certain until I got out of the situation and got into the next town and was able to Google who those people were that stopped me at the checkpoint. But in essence, you know, I was surrounded by 12 to 18 masked men brandishing machetes and bats. And I had assumed they were teachers. And I think I did a piece of an episode about this one, so I'll make a link to it in the episode file. But, you know, what it came down to was I just found a way to make the guys laugh. And
yes.
I think it, you know, I hadn't thought of it before, but now that you're saying this, like it really, it comes back to the fact that we're all just people. And if we interact mm-hmm. on that human to human level, we can get through a lot of really, we can get through a lot of really awkward moments.
Yeah.
It's funny, you know, like that was literally a life-threatening moment that I got through. Probably, if those really were cartel people that you interacted with, it was potentially life-threatening to you. And because you didn't treat it as life-threatening, because you just treated them as human beings, you got through, I got through. And then I think about the interactions we have sometimes on a daily basis with people that are hostile.
Yep.
And they aren't life-threatening, but we don't get through them as unscathed, right? And I think emotionally, there's all these scars that I certainly carry from interactions with people that have been negative. And I think there's a really good lesson. There's a good lesson in what you're saying about how to travel through Mexico, but I think also just how to travel through life.
Yep. It's funny. I'll use my husband as an example because, like I said, we're very different, right? And I do this in my company too with our travelers, but I set intentions prior to an experience, especially one that you know is going to be challenging, like mm-hmm. road tripping with your pets through Mexico. and he actually set intentions for this trip too to be positive and sort of not think worst case scenario, because in certain circumstances, especially when you're going in with one perceived view, it's easy to do that, right? It's easy to have your bias perception and to have it sort of taint your experience. And so my husband went in thinking positively about everything, including interacting with people who speak a different language. And when he came out of it, he said one of the things that he learned as a bartender, like as someone who is in the service industry as a bartender, he said he's going to look at interactions when someone comes into the bar and it doesn't speak the language well and struggles mm-hmm. with interacting and asking. He said he used to be impatient with that because, you know, he didn't understand what that's like. And in Mexico, he finally was the person who struggled to speak and had to have help from people who do speak the language, in whether you're using Google Translate or something. And so now he's like, whenever someone's going to come in, my thought process is, instead of giving them a hard time or being impatient or being even angry, I'm going to be like, we're on this adventure together. Let's figure it out. Like, how do we do this? Charades, Google Translate. Yep, like, yep. He learned a huge lesson.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah,
isn't it? And yeah. That's one of the, like, the powers of travel. And honestly, the power, I think, of Mexico as a country, too, because it's they're such an accepting people. And they just sort of work with you. Like, we had so many servers that didn't speak English. Obviously, they're in Mexico. They don't need to. and they worked with us and they taught us. We had so many servers that were like helped us learn Spanish, helped us like learn about the culture and learn about etiquette, Mexican etiquette while eating or doing anything, just because they were willing to help. And so I think that's super powerful too. A takeaway from our journey, part of our experience is just the educational aspect, the perception aspect of it is super powerful.
And it sounds to me like setting those expectations ahead of time and being mindful of what you want out of it and how you're going into it to ensure that you get out of it what you want out of it.
Exactly. And road tripping is one of those things, especially through Mexico, where you take things one thing at a time, and you just know how to do it, right? You research ahead of time, toll roads, even the way Mexicans drive, which is actually one of my favorite things about the country.
You and me both, that whole suicide lane, right? Yeah. Pull over to the right so someone can pass.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It's just... I feel like, especially when we drive here, and I use this thing that we learned when we went to the Sphere here in Las Vegas and saw a postcard from Earth. Highly recommend if you're ever in Las Vegas. It's so profound. It's actually, you're kind of surprised that they would do something for the masses so with such a message about like how we're destroying the earth and climate change and individualism versus communityism.
Is a postcard from Earth? Is this like a movie, a play? What is this?
It's like a movie that they have it. They play it in the Sphere. So the Sphere is like, you're like
360
almost
degree. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah. But they mention in it this concept of being the center of the like the spoke, right? Everyone wants to be the center. And I feel like the way we drive here, everybody's sort of just like driving for themselves. They're not driving for everyone else on the road. And in Mexico, it felt very much like everyone was driving as a community. Like even in the chaoticness, like it was like a puzzle where you just sort of like threw the pieces and then you sort of like worked it out all together. I guess that's not a great way to explain it, but
No. I get what you're saying. Yeah. And I oftentimes feel that way. And then sometimes I wonder, why does everybody have to just drive in the left-hand lane? Sometimes I feel like when you get the multiple lanes, the single lanes become relatively easy, but boy, they have like three lanes on each side and everyone's driving in that left-hand lane and it just confounds mm-hmm. me.
And in Mexico, even if you have a one-lane road, you have people driving half on the lane, half on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And then they're signaling to people like we would even notice they signal with their right signal to say it's safe to pass, like to or no, their left signal, it's safe to pass me.
Yeah.
And the other side does the same thing. And so you're able to pass in one lane with no problem. Like you don't need a passing lane to come up. So just learning those intricacies before you head out on a road trip to Mexico is important too, because it will make your driving experience so smooth when you get how they drive.
Now, one of the things that you said as you're talking about being prepared, right? One of the things that you said, and this was your first driving trip through Mexico, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yep. So then one of the things that you appear to have been prepared for that surprises me is when you got out of your car at these cartel checkpoints, and I don't know if they really were cartel. We're going to call them cartel checkpoints.
Right? It felt, yeah. They were unknowns.
Unknowns, we'll yeah. Just, yeah. As, when you got out of your car, they let you take your stuff, which suggests like your valuables, the paperwork, the money, the phone, right? And I get the phone, like you got your purse with your money and your phone, but having all of that paperwork in one place suggests to me that you were prepared for something like that.
Well, yeah, I didn't, I thought about scenarios because you do read sort of travel stories of things going wrong while you're driving through Mexico and certain situations you can get in. So you want to be prepared with extra pesos, a few USD dollars, like kind of in different places. But I had a whole folder.
You're pulling a quarter out of a guy's ear.
Yeah. Aaron's got like money just hidden in different pockets, but I had one folder that clearly wasn't anything that they were going to want that had pesos, a few dollars. It had all of our identification, our passports, like everything. So it was easy to grab and hold while I was holding the cat or the dog. And after the first checkpoint, I didn't ask in the first checkpoint. I sort of just grabbed the things that I didn't want to leave in the car and no one said anything. So I did it the second checkpoint and no one said anything. So I think as long as it doesn't, you know, you're not taking out like a suitcase and holding on to it. I think they're, you know, that was our experience, was that it was okay to grab what was necessary. Something went down so we could have what we needed on us. Oh, so
that's so cool.
Big lesson.
Well, Heather, yep. I think like that for me, I think is a wrap though. I would love if you could send me some of your favorite pictures or pictures of some of your favorite moments from the trip that I can share on the episode page. And
absolutely.
And, you know, and I'll put a link to your business because I'm guessing you also help people do stuff like this if this is the kind of trip they want to make, right?
Yes. Yeah. So we're very goal oriented. So, for example, this trip was the goal was to learn Spanish and immerse ourselves in that language. We just happened to add a road trip to it. But yeah, we help people. It's sort of self-development focused and goal oriented. So, yeah. And we help you prepare because that's a lot. I mean, the time it took us to prepare for this Mexico trip was quite a lot between the two of us. And so we sort of just help take that time aspect off of their shoulders, which is nice.
Okay, cool. So yeah, so I'll add all of that into the episode information and, hey, thank you so much. And for sharing your trip and thank Aaron for remembering me. What was that? 6 years later?
Oh my gosh. 2017, right?
Yeah.
Almost seven,
6.5 years later.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please thank him for me. And hey, I hope you and I end up running into each other on a trip at some point.
I think we will. I think we can make that happen. I don't think it has to be serendipitous. I think we can just plan it, right? It could be fun.
Oh yeah. I guess that's the thing you do is you plan that stuff.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah. It could be a combination of both.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, Heather, and I'll catch up with you somewhere on an agave road trip.
Have a good one. Thank you, Lou.
You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Drive responsibly. Eat responsibly, too. And listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive. Do not walk, either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stressing capacity. And consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening.
Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.